that drive. Bill Lane crosses up. Van Vliet, okie doke move, and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get on a rebound. Kicks it out. Kansas Sykes for three.
Got it.
It's
good. They got it.
Kansas Sykes for three.
From local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Friends, enemies, and anyone in between, welcome to the Red Zone on WZND. I'm Leo Stauderher, your sports director, and I'm joined by my regular cast of characters. We have my assistant sports director, Joey Dwyer, who recently tried to revive the Bull Moose Party. You can find all the information on Facebook.
Hey, or at WZND.com.
Yes. And our producer is Joe Kennedy, who in his spare time teaches a breakdancing class on the quad. You can find him there on Wednesdays.
Wednesdays at 3 o'clock. If you want to join, come meet me out there right under the big tree.
No, just listen for the Run DMC music.
No experience required. No experience required.
But guys, as much fun as that is, we have a pretty hectic week in Redbird sports. I guess the biggest story came a little bit this afternoon with our guy Jake Fogle, pretty much being the one to break it, that Redbird guard and really best basketball player on campus, DJ Horn, has entered the transfer portal. Really just another hit, and what keeps on adding up is the fifth player from the basketball team to enter the transfer portal. Where should we even start with this, guys?
This is the one. All the other players who have entered the portal, it's like, okay, well, we still have the core, right? We have the young guys who are going to be the difference makers in this program.
Right.
And the biggest one of those guys is DJ Horn. So for him to be leaving the program is such a gut punch to this team who was not good.
Mm-hmm. And they were not.
The only thing that we had to talk about, like we've been talking about it all season, we're like, okay, but these freshmen and sophomores are going to be good. Yeah. Like, that's what we talked about all year. And now the pinnacle of that, the best one of those freshmen and sophomores, is now gone.
And the Robin to his Batman in Antonio Reeves just declared for the NBA draft. So, like, that's the whole dynamic duo was Reeves and Horn was who we had to look forward to. And they're both potentially gone. Reeves is going to be back. There's no way he gets drafted. But
I mean, you never know, though. Because, like, even if he doesn't get drafted, some guys just, no matter where they go, even if he goes overseas, he...
Just
like people, people want to, like, I don't know, they just want to go professionally.
And again, get your money while you still can.
Yeah, because you can always make the NBA, too, from overseas. You've seen people like that go overseas for a long period of time, like Patrick Beverley. Like, he was there for about 8 years, almost his whole entire career.
What confuses me is, what does it say about the state of the program right now, where there's just this mass exodus right here? Where do you go from here now?
Because you got to get your recruits coming in, and like that's always a tough problem to do, especially at a mid-major school in Illinois that hasn't had success in the past 3 years. And another thing with the transfer portal, like what it's become now, like it's like free agency now. It's like they almost have to incorporate something, because also Illinois' shooting guard Adam Miller, now he's in the transfer portal, started today too. So two out of the top guards at both ISU and University of Illinois are now in the transfer portal on the same day.
And you brought it up, what a monster the transfer portal is. And I think that's something that Dan Mueller has been playing into a lot recently, probably to pick up some slack for some poor recruiting out of high school recruits. Because you look at a lot of guys on this team came from either junior colleges or other colleges. Like Mahorsic came from Lewis University and a junior college before that. Mm-hmm. Sissoko or Abdu Jai even came from a JUCO. Like just a lot of these guys come through the transfer portal. So the Redbirds have been active in
strong?
It.
Yeah.
But that's where it hurts, where you had your two organic guys, two guys you recruited out of high school that you plan to build around for 4 years, they're leaving. That's the part that hurts the most in all this.
And the worst thing is we are not an anti-Dan Mueller show. Like, we love Dan. Coach Mueller, he's a really nice guy.
Yeah.
And just in the past couple of years, the recruits have not been there. Like you said, Leo, it's been a poor recruiting a couple of years, and these are two guys who were highlights of those years, though.
Right.
Antonio Reeves and DJ Horn have really been. I don't know what kind of shenanigans are going on right now. Leo and Joe are mouthing words to each other. I don't know what I'm saying wrong.
I don't know. No, you're not. You're good. You're good.
But those two guys have been so concrete for this team. And they are, like Leo said, your guys that you got out of high school. You haven't had much success recruiting out of high school. And so for these two guys to leave, you really have to ask the question, we've got Kyle Brendon, the new AD. Is it time to go in a different direction with the men's basketball program?
I think it's too late now in this season.
Like who are you going to get?
He already said, I'm pretty sure he already tweeted it out, too, and everything. Like, this is our guy, at least this year, because you can't also get rid of that contract, too. Like, especially this late into the offseason. I don't know. It would be a very big shocker if he left this year.
And, I mean, part of the thing you got to think about now, too, is the situation with Kyle Brendon taking over and this problem where he almost, if he's coming in a COVID year, he's been here for a few months, he doesn't really know the coach. He kind of had to feel it out. And, you know, I think if you fire a coach within 3 months on the job, 4 months now, what does that say, you know, to Brock Speck or Leah Johnson or all these other coaches, that this guy doesn't care, you know, he doesn't want to get to know the culture, that he's just going to come in and firing. So I think he did kind of have to feel it out with Mueller, and he might get, you know, another season at least out of him.
But I think there's a big difference.
I know you know that,
but look at volleyball, who we'll get to in a second.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They're first in the Missouri Valley. Coach Johnson has had nothing but success. Coach Speck brought us to the FCS championship.
But it's apples to oranges, like I said last week on the
Coach
show.
Coach Mueller still gave us success, too, in the past, but not
right.
recently.
Right, so I,
not
that's what I mean. I think it's a tough situation for Kyle Brendon coming in, having to deal with this, because he doesn't know the situation yet. I think he had to feel it out a little bit more, and this is what we're seeing now.
And every fan wants him gone, too.
Yeah.
It's like there's no one on social media that's really kind of supporting the idea to bring him back, but it's coming down to Kyle Brendon. I think he knows what he's doing, and like it's tough to fire a coach your first, 3 months on the
job
that's paid
what
the most money
like,
on campus. Yeah.
You kind of just have to, it's a situation he's stuck with right now, so he's weathering it out right now. And yeah, you look at now this is just a team that doesn't have much direction, doesn't have any kind of foundation. It's going to be a tough year. So why don't we just talk about a team that's a lot more.
Oh,
yeah,
let's
talk about volleyball.
Great game today. Won in 3-0. Got off to a great start in the first set. I got to watch the first set. They won 25-13. Got off to a great start. Up 16-6 halfway through it. They were just in control the whole game. Like, I mean, they won 3-0. And it seemed easy against Indiana State.
And Indiana State was a team the first time they faced, they split with them, which, you know, I thought maybe might give them problems. But then I went back and looked at the box scores from those games. That was, remember when Steph Jankiewicz and Kaylee Martin were out of the lineup, Sydney Holt was hurt. They're finally at 100%. They've been on a roll lately. They haven't been splitting with as many teams. This Redbird team is in a dangerous trajectory right now.
They have not lost a set in 6 games.
That's ridiculous.
They've not lost a set. They've swept everyone they've played since they played Missouri State.
Yeah.
And it is just, like you said, Leo, this team is just on a roll. They play Bradley tomorrow at 2. You can catch that game right here on 103.3 WZND, the Pulse of Redbird Nation.
I mean, how about Bradley, too, that they didn't get to play their first game because Valpo got COVIDed. So now Bradley's coming in not having played in the tournament. They have to face ISU on a roll. Like, that's a tough test.
Yeah. And we were talking about this about a month ago, how when all these problems were going on within the team and everything, players were getting out. We were saying that it's just going to take time, especially this season.
Right.
They're going to get there. And since the last time we talked about them, they've definitely gotten there. They won the conference. Steph Jankiewicz is looking like first time ever, or the first person ever in the Missouri Valley Conference to win set of the year twice. And she did
not
it
bad.
Again.
And she did it with not as much games played as the rest of the setters in the conference. And then you talk about someone who's really stepped up when there were so many key players out. Sarah Kushner has taken her game to a whole nother level this year. She's one of the top players in the Valley, and she's only a sophomore. So I don't want to say it was a good thing you had your three key seniors out of lineup, but it forced other players to step up. We saw Nicole Lund and Caitlin Pronzinski really have grown into their roles nicely. So it just took a lot of time with this team,
and
but it's paying off.
And what a great sign for the future of this team as well, where you're missing these marquee players on your squad, but then all of a sudden you get these underclassmen who can step up and have the same impact. And that speaks to Coach Johnson's recruiting and her coaching ability. She is, for my money, the best coach at ISU right now. She's completely revitalized this program, and
definitely.
They're my favorite team to watch at ISU because they're so good and they're so dominant. They, even if they fall down they never seem out of a game or a set ever.
And what's even fun, too, is you mentioned they're your favorite team to watch. We can go to the arena now to watch them. The first ISU team we could go watch in person.
I'll be there. I'll be there on Saturday.
I'm worried about Bradley for their sake because you haven't played a game yet. ISU's rolling. You're at ISU. And the I looked at the picture, say, like the arena looked pretty packed for what it was allowed to be. So
and
yeah, it's going to be a tough scene to play against.
I still got my shirt that the university program board gave out a couple years ago.
Ooh,
it says, private school, public shaming,
ooh,
hashtag beat Bradley.
Nice.
And
yeah,
you know I'm breaking that out.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be a bloodbath. To put it lightly, I don't see any way that ISU loses this game or any games in this Valley tournament. I think we're going to see them make a little bit of a run here in the NCAA tournament.
And let's talk about that a little bit, because last year they're pretty much in the same situation they've been in the past couple years, where they roll through the Valley, but then they don't really get a good benefit of the doubt when it comes to the NCAA tournament. They always have to face a tough team in that first round. They potentially, if they... fingers crossed, they get through the Valley, they win the Valley tournament outright, so they won the regular season and the tournament. They should get, like, some respect from the NCAA rankings, you'd have to think, right?
And, yeah, I would agree with that. Like, they have been in a couple of years. They were ranked previously, I believe, or no, they were close
they were
on the...
Around,
they were receiving
yeah.
votes
they
in the past 2 years.
Votes, yeah.
But this year, like... I saw a lot of drama on social media because they didn't play as many games. A lot of people were saying that maybe Missouri State even and Drake, they had a possibility to win the Valley if ISU played about two or three more games compared to the rest of the teams.
And there was some controversy with that.
Mm-hmm.
Some teams were upset that the Redbirds were named the Valley champion for regular season because they didn't play as many games.
That's what I was saying, yeah.
Yeah, okay, I get where you're coming from. But you look at their non-conference, I thought you meant their non-conference schedule, because like they beat Cincinnati and Marquette, who were both ranked at the time, so they've had a smaller schedule than some other teams out there, but they've handled it very well.
And all that really matters is the conference tournament, because that's the one where you're going to get into the NCAAs, and right now no team in the Valley, I don't think no team would maybe be an automatic bid, maybe ISU if they don't win it, but that would be really tough.
I think the lack of games played is going to come back to bite them there, so they have to win the conference.
And especially if we're talking about putting a little bit more respect from the committee on the Redbirds in terms of seeding, it's going to be an awfully tough task if they don't win the Valley, get in, and then even then to... they'll probably have to go up against one of the top five schools in the nation. So winning the Valley is mighty important for the Birds.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's something that they're just going to have to make sure they take care of. And you can catch all those games here on WZND. And also another... it's been a busy week in ISU sports, but let's talk about one of the craziest finishes. You guys catch that softball game this weekend on Sunday, the
Loyola?
Come from behind one against Loyola?
Yeah, I just saw the stats of it.
Yeah, I believe our guest, news and sports guest, Eric Schweizer, who's sitting here very quietly in the studio with us, appreciate it. I believe he was calling that game.
He was. I was listening to him, and I got to say, it was one of the wildest ISU sporting events I've heard in the last 3 years. I'll paint the picture for you. They were down 4-0 going into the bottom of the seventh here in the second game of a double header, and you know, nothing to hang your hat on, but we're looking to sweep the Ramblers, and then they just got a come from behind win, five unanswered runs to walk it off and win their 10th consecutive game. It was just absolutely wild.
And they had their game postponed too, canceled. I don't know, it depends. It's really weird because if they're going to play Loyola again, because they played the doubleheader on Sunday, and they're supposed to play Saturday in the three-game series, but winning 10 games in a row, that's very hard to do, especially right now. But their pitching has been insanely good in these past couple games, and it's weird to think that, we talked about this too before, how their pitching are also... it's like they're switching from first base to pitcher, Morgan Day and
right,
that
they're getting
Leonard.
It done with pretty much just two pitchers.
Yeah, that's how it's been the whole season.
And their bats have also come alive. They have some great hitters. Mack Leonard, who you already mentioned. Kaylee Cheval, who's batting over 350.
Yeah,
she came
week.
Onto the show. And there are a couple other players, too, who are just hitting the lights out. And it is just this team is so fun to watch. I got to call some of the games this season already, and there's plenty more. So a team right now with an 18-4 record, they're 5-0 in conference on a 10-game tear. They're 3-0 at home. It is just absolute domination from the softball team right now.
And the teams they lost to, too, have been really good, like Kentucky and Tennessee, and even some games, one game against Clemson earlier on the year, but a lot of games postponed too, so they've been through a lot of adversity to like begin the season going down, traveling down to Florida and South Carolina, but also not playing those games. Like, it's like you're traveling that far, but only play about like half of them.
Yeah, it's a weird grind, but they've been handling it well, and they're on a roll here. They might challenge Joey for his favorite Redbird team to watch this spring, because they're certainly going to be exciting. And another team that's been rolling has been the soccer team, and coming up after this break, we're going to have an interview with one of their standouts, Ashley Santos, so stick around for that. You're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation. Hey, welcome back to The Red Zone. Leo Stauder with Joey Dwyer and Joe Kennedy. We're now joined by Redbird soccer midfielder Ashley Santos. The Redbird soccer team is playing a spring season, which is atypical. Ashley, first things first, how's that been playing in the spring this year?
It definitely felt a little bit different, but also not at the same time. Like, I keep calling it the fall, despite it being the spring, just because I'm so used to soccer season, summer, fall, soccer, and then kind of a little bit of a break. It's just weird school-wise. Like, it's throwing me off scheduling because I'm used to having a winter break coming up as opposed to a summer and, in this case, a graduation kind of thing. So just from a timing, it feels off and a little bit weird. But soccer-wise, we're still competing. In the spring, we usually compete. And although we're playing more games than we would on a normal spring season, it still aligns with our standards of competitions anyways in the spring.
And do you think that the spring season has affected the way that the team has played at all and that sort of thing?
Honestly, like, yes and no. I don't like for our team, I don't want to make any excuses. There are no excuses. Like, we're who we are and we've built what we have. I think this spring actually gave us an opportunity to bond more than we usually would, because usually come in a fall and yeah, we have our freshmen come in the summer, which would give us about a month with the freshmen together, but we've had all fall, which I think is actually an advantage. If all the teams I've been a part of, this is definitely the team with the most chemistry and a solid culture. So that's really cool to see. From a soccer standpoint, the only thing that's kind of throwing it is just competitions. We didn't have nearly as many competitions running into conference. So we're used to playing a good solid 8-10 maybe pre-games as opposed to before we start conference. And we just didn't have those games, and I think that lack of experience on the field as a whole kind of shows with some of these recent losses that we've had. But all in all, I think it has its pros and cons, but I think our team's handling it well, and we definitely used that time we had together in the fall and even the winter to our advantage, I think, from a culture and team bonding standpoint.
And so how is life outside of practices and games? Do you guys get to see each other still outside of it, or is it mostly bonding inside like a practice environment?
So a little bit of both. We've had to be careful because of COVID in terms of getting together. We have some pretty strict team rules that we should only really be seeing each other, and we really don't want our team meeting outside of practice and more than six people, just because of we don't want to spread COVID. If for some reason someone does get it, we want to make sure it's confided in small groups. So that has been difficult in terms of, like, we can't get the whole entire team together unless it's a team activity, but we still do team activities like that often. We always have our pregame meals at the whole team there. We do little team bonding activities, like we'll go mess around and play volleyball in the North Gym in Horton and just do something different that we can get together. So as it affects maybe a whole team, it doesn't affect small cases where everyone still gets together, whether it's grabbing coffee or a group of girls at an apartment. It's still relatively normal. It's just maybe that whole team facet outside of a coaching and playing standpoint.
And you talked about how tight the team was. What were some of the goals you set as a team that you hope to accomplish this season?
Well, championship is always a goal, right? We had that set, but we also want to say, like, hey, well, what are we going to do? What do we need to do to get that championship? Because everyone wants to win. Everyone wants a ring on their finger, but there's a lot more that comes and a lot more work that needs to be put in before that comes. Some of our focuses were team bonding. That team chemistry was a big focus and goal of ours, to just have the best culture that we've ever had and know each other on and off the field, so I can know how to push someone a little bit further when we are on the field. Motivating competitive edge was another thing we wanted to push. We started the season with a pretty big roster, although it's dwindled a bit. As you know, some people don't always make that travel roster, but we wanted to set the tone that everyone has a role, and everyone's role is important, whether you're a starting player playing 90 minutes or you're someone at home who's just working to get on that roster. Everyone's role is super important, and everyone needs to work to get better each and every day despite their role. That was one of our goals. And then our final goal is honestly to have fun. At this level, you know, sometimes that gets lost you want to win, and some people forget to have fun, but that's what our team really thrives off of, is that fun, competitive, wanting to be there. We're a really goofy team if you just watch us kind of in warm-ups and such like that. So making sure we keep things fun was another goal of ours, in hopes that those three things would kind of lead us to that championship for sure.
And looking at your season from a more individual standpoint, you've been carrying a lot of the load as far as offensive production goes on the team. Were you expecting coming into this season to take such a big step in terms of production?
No. I will say my goal was to score once, because I'm a senior and I hadn't scored a goal. And, you know, you look at the number of minutes I've played in the 3 years and you're like, how is this girl not done? You know, so that was definitely a goal of mine, was to just score once. But having scored a couple times and just helping out definitely was not on my radar. Hey, we all have a role though, and I guess that's the one I kind of started to step into. No, short answer, no, I did not anticipate that. Does it feel good? A little bit, but I'm definitely not used to that by any means.
And so as a freshman and sophomore, you were listed as a defender, right?
Yeah.
And then, okay, so how, and then you moved to like the midfield. How was that transition? Did you like that, or were you experienced with it either?
I've actually always been, I've played the holding mid position all 4 years. I just guess they've changed it more to a midfield as opposed to a defense, because I play that defensive holding mid, yeah. So it's more of a defensive role in general. I will say though, this season I was told to be a little bit more attack minded. My coaches were confident with my ability to dribble and shoot more so, and that's something I've improved in over the years. So I think maybe that improvement personally has prepared me to maybe move up a little bit more, as opposed to just keeping that more stay home defensive role. So it's just maybe a little bit more of a improvement and an adaptation, because it's been this position.
And so you talked about having to adapt your game to that more attack role. Is there a player you try to pattern your game after at the college or professional level?
Big fan of Julie Ertz. I don't know if you guys are, yeah, okay. big fan of her as a person, as a player. She often finds herself in the defensive holding mid position, or even a center back, which I've dabbled in a little bit of both as well. She's just a heck of a player, from winning ball to distribution. That's definitely someone I watch when I'm watching games, and that's definitely someone I would love to be more like. clearly, she's a whole lot better and more successful, but, you know, you can always dream and set your goals, right? But.
So looking at your life off the field a little bit, what a lot of people don't recognize about student athletes is, okay, they're also like full-time students. And for you, you are student teaching right now, which in and of itself is like working a full-time job. So how are you balancing being a Division I athlete and also student teaching?
Yeah, I'm currently in my classroom. That's a beautiful tree with students. It's a lot. I will say, like, when people have always asked me in the past, like, oh, like, how are you? I'm like, I'm good. I'm just busy. This is a whole new level of busy, because not only am I giving my all and expected to give my all in student teaching, which, like you said, full-time job, just no payment there. but then also I'm expected to give my all, and I want to give my all in my sport and to my team. So it's tough because of student teaching, I'm not able to be at every single team practice, but I'm still making up everything in some fashion. So, for example, tomorrow I won't be able to be at team training because I need to be at school at 7, but I will run at 6 in the morning. I'll come back after school. I will lift, and then I will have a one-on-one training session. So I'm still making up all that time that I may be missing from team with the team, but I'm still just balancing it all. It's definitely crazy. I just came off of spring break from the high school, and let me tell you, I was like, oh, it's gonna be tough going back, because I was actually with the team for a full week at every single practice, and I was like, oh, I miss this, because right now I can only go twice a week with my schedule, unless it's the weekend. So it's definitely a lot to balance, but I mean, I'm committed, and my big thing is I love every moment I'm in. So I love being here at school. Like, I'm not looking at the clock waiting to go. I just love this time here. And then I also enjoy every single moment I have with my team. So although I'm busy, it's not like anything's a chore. It's like, oh, I have to do this. It's like, this is such a great opportunity. And I'm just really grateful that I've had the ability to be able to student teach and play, because there was There was some talk that they weren't going to let me. So I'm very, very grateful that they let me do it, and I've been able to pull it off thus far. So.
And you've started 68 out of the 69 possible games as a Redbird. So can you describe the type of training you've been doing to stay in such great fitness and go for so long, too? Because most of the games, you are out there for the full 90.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, it's honestly, fitness is a big piece. Like, there's no, as much as there's an off season, there's no off season. Like, for example, winter break at the gym 5 times out of the 6 days, or like 6 times out of the 7 days of the week. If we have 2 days that we can have an off day, it's like, no, I'm going to still go get a run in. Although soccer may not be in the forefront, like, in terms of going out and getting touches when I'm home, it's always keeping my fitness high, making sure my body comp and my nutrition is in the right place, because that's where you get your energy. That's where you're able to stay healthy. Although I've improved with my soccer ability since I've been here, my fitness capabilities have skyrocketed, and I think that's what's really let me succeed and be able to play those long minutes and for a long time and still going, luckily, right now, and hopefully will continue. So definitely nutrition, too. That's another thing that, like, I didn't care about when I was in high school. I eat whatever the heck I wanted. I went soccer practice. I played, and it is what it is. But here, it's like you need to prioritize it if you want to be able to go all day academically, and then even so at practice, energy levels, and even just focus-wise. So definitely prioritizing those two things have been a big piece that I think I personally seen myself grow in, and it's allowed me to better my game as a result of it. Like I said, although I might not be improving a ton on the actual ball, it has improved because I'm able to last longer. I'm able to be mentally sharp for longer because I'm in a fit state.
Between soccer, training, teaching, you have a pretty full workload. When you're not doing all that, what's something you like to do to try to take your mind off the grind that you're in?
I love to bake. Absolutely love it. Yeah, I absolutely love it. Whenever I have time, I do bring in little cookies and whatever. Like, we had a team meal, and I made copycat cosmic brownies, if anyone is a fan. Yeah.
So that sounds so good.
I'll have to get you some. I'll give some to Emma.
Okay. Oh, please do. Please do.
And then I also have a dog, and she's my best friend in my life. So whenever I can hang out with her, just walks, cuddling, whatever it may be, I love hanging out with my dog and baking, honestly.
Oh my goodness, that makes me so hungry. I haven't eaten lunch yet. That sounded so good. And with this extra year of eligibility that COVID has given all student athletes, and I know you're in the process of student teaching right now, but did the thought ever cross your mind to maybe come back and play an extra season?
Yeah, that's the plan. So I recently got admitted to grad school about a week ago at ISU. So if all goes to plan, Coach Sylvie wants me back. I do intend to be back here in the fall for one last season, hopefully. So that was a big question and waiting game that I've been on. Like, do I go find a teaching job, or am I going to get into grad school? And I luckily did get admitted, so that is the plan.
And that's kind of two birds with one stone, because in teaching, when you get your master's, that's where the money comes in, too. So you get right to play some more soccer, and then you'll get paid more. So it's
hopefully
really the best of both worlds.
That's the hope.
So Ashley, okay, I went to Naperville Central, and you went to Naperville North. So I got to ask you, tell me a couple of your favorite memories from high school in general, and then also playing against Central.
Okay, well, I got one for you for Central.
Okay.
we were tied with you guys in OT, if I recall correctly. My memory doesn't serve me well, but we were tied with you guys in OT, and we had a corner kick. We botched it. Nothing came out of it. And you guys were on a counterattack to us. And I remember I had to run a good 85 yards straight back. And our goalie ended up missing it. I ended up clearing off the line. I don't recall if we won or not, but I just remember that moment. And my coach never lets me stop talking about it either. He always, if you talk to goalies, that's like one of his favorite things that I did. I was like, okay, whatever. that was a good moment against Central. We did most of the time win if I do recall correctly.
That seems like a central theme. Every time we have an athlete from the Naperville area, they're always talking down on Naperville North.
Man.
So
we had Sarah Kushner on once too before.
Oh, yep. Awesome. They just won the MVC. That's awesome for them. Yeah. And then my favorite moment at Naperville North Soccer, we played, I don't know how familiar you are with me and my story. My mom passed away my senior year.
Okay.
And we played Mateo Valley my senior year, and the game that we played Mateo Valley, we hosted, and it was like in honor of her, and I ended up scoring the winning goal 1-0 to win that game, and that was a really cool moment, definitely one of my favorite high school soccer, all of the above moments.
And we'd like to thank Ashley for coming on the show. We're still waiting on her to send those cosmic brownies to Joey, but we'll take care of those
soon. No, yeah, Ashley and my girlfriend are super close friends,
so we will get
those. So that's what she was saying is she'll give them to Emma, and then Emma will give them to us. So, but I'm going to hold Ashley accountable for that because
for a red zone.
I'm saying because we used to have our red zone popsicles. We're now out of red zone snacks,
and we're not buying new popsicles.
And they have no food in the Fell Hall vending machines now, so we have no snacks here.
Yeah. So we have to go to Qdoba every time or somewhere at the Bone.
So we're really reliant on those brownies.
Yeah. So Ashley, if you're listening, please, we need those brownies ASAP. Thank you so much.
And we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to have our news and sports guest Eric Schweizer on to talk about some high school football. So you're not going to want to miss that. You're listening to the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
This is Barstool Big Cat, and you're listening to the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
And we're back. It may be the spring, but we still have some high school football going on, which is wild to say. And we have a local expert because our guy, Eric Schweizer, has been going to a game every Friday night for TV10. So, Eric, first things first, tell me a little bit about what's it been like to be covering high school football in the spring.
It's been really weird, been really cold for the first games of the season. So usually your warmer games would be first, and it's going to be the exact opposite for these teams. So I've talked to some of the coaches, and they're kind of like, this is just playoff weather right now. It's something we're used to, but not at the beginning of the season. So that's something they're kind of getting into right now.
And I've never really, like, thought about that, how the weather can be a difference. Like, towards the end of the year, you know, things are getting cold. People are not as into it on the sidelines and just staying warm. But now at the beginning of the year, I think it's a bad thing because, like, injuries, you're not as adjusted to the new season. And, like, usually you see injuries happening in the beginning of the year because you're not used to it and everything. So that could definitely have a factor, I think.
Yeah, I think just the way that they have structured the football schedule is definitely interesting. It's awesome that they actually get to play, but I can't imagine getting completely flip-flopped, especially, you know, some of these athletes play basketball or run track too. So it's just a conversation we've had in the past that it's really an unfortunate situation that they've had to stack all these sports on top of each other, but it's just still awesome that they're actually getting to play.
And, you know, that's the atmosphere. That's the problems we have. It's a different sports calendar than we're used to. But, Eric, one of the teams I'll start you off with, tell me a little bit about Normal Community, because they were one of my favorite teams to cover last fall when I was the high school beat reporter. And I remember talking to Coach Jason Drangwitz, and he said they have three goals at the start of every season: to win the Big 12, to make the IHSA playoffs, and to beat Normal West. And they took care of business in week one against Normal West, winning the Chili Bowl. How was that atmosphere? Because that's always one of the coolest things that ever happens when West and Community play at Hancock Stadium, and they fill it. You'd think it's an ISU football regular season game sometimes.
Yeah, so actually this year they were supposed to play at Normal Community. They weren't supposed to play at Hancock, and then weather forced them to play at Hancock.
Oh, what a coincidence.
So they still played at Hancock, and you would have thought the stadium was completely filled, how loud those fans were. They were just so happy to see their kids, their friends back. There weren't any student sections or anything, but it was loud in there.
And as far as the game goes, that was probably two of the best teams in the area, because we saw Community last year made it to the state quarterfinals. How did they look in their first action of the season? Because now they haven't gotten to play in a couple weeks because of a COVID outbreak.
Yeah, so Community, they won 14-0 against Normal West in week one. All those points were scored in the first half. Their defense looks nasty, and both offensive lines looked horrible. They looked like they hadn't guarded anybody in a year and a half, which is just about what it's been. But, yeah, that's kind of how it was. It was just each team was trying to run the ball. The ball doesn't throw very well in the cold. So it's really been a ground and pound kind of offense for all these teams.
You really got to get a All-State lineman Joe Kennedy there, graduate of Naperville Central. Exactly. Nobody's getting through you on the line, Joe.
No way.
So, aside from the weather, have you noticed anything else that has been a little off about this season, or has it been pretty much par for the course?
I would say it's been pretty typical then for the most part. You know, they are, like, having to social distance at the end of games, but they still meet in their huddles. They're together the whole game. So, really, besides the, like we said, COVID outbreak last week, I don't know if it was actually in their program or not, but in the Ironman program, they weren't able to play their game against Quincy Notre Dame because of COVID-19 issues. So, they're only 1-0 right now. And haven't played their second game.
And you talked about the defense, too. That was something that was killer for them in their postseason run last year, was they just had an awesome defense. So, obviously, they, you know, are picking up right where they left off. But on the other side of that game, we saw Normal West. They had Carson Camp, who we all know, starting quarterback at South Dakota at this point. They were running a very high-powered offense last year before losing to Providence Catholic in the playoffs. How have they looked in life after Carson?
So
they replaced them.
So they looked really not good in week one. They did not look very good because they were driving a couple times, actually. One, they fumbled the ball on like the 10-yard line, and then later they got stuffed on fourth down on the 2-yard line. So they missed opportunities, and they really have a messed up quarterback situation. They have two guys that they're running at quarterback. Almost every other like drive, it seems. Some like it looks like one guy's more in there to facilitate the run because of the fumble issues that they were having with one of the other guys. And the other guy is supposed to be the guy that's supposed to be able to throw the ball better, but
that's not happening.
It's not been happening. And then they run the Wildcat a little bit with their running back. And
so they're taking like three guys to replace Carson Camp, which speaks a lot to how good he was then, that it's just there's no organic replacement for him then.
Do you know how like the preseason schedule went? Were they practicing all throughout the winter and fall, or did they? Because it didn't get announced that they weren't playing in the fall till well, that August.
I think it was like in August.
So it was like,
before the season was supposed to happen. Because I could actually fill that in.
You would know, yeah.
Yeah, my brother was on the team, so they they weren't allowed to do full pad practices, so it was kind of weird. Like they were, I think, practicing just maybe helmets and maybe not shoulder pads either. So they were going through drills. There was a limit on what kind of drills they could do either, preparing as if the season was going to start, you know, in early August, like it was supposed to. And then it was like 2 weeks before the season was supposed to start, they say. That's when the IHSA came out with their original calendar. Football is going to start in February. I think it was going to be February 19th might have been when they were going to start. So very early like that. But then it was all that stuff with basketball. When that got, their season got rearranged, that's when football got pushed back into March, which I think is probably better that they're playing now playing in February, because that's just way colder. Nobody wants to be outside then.
No, we had that. We had 1 week, we were just going back and watching one of our old interviews with Sarah Kushner, and Leo and I are both in our apartments just bundled
shivering,
up in winter coats hats.
That was the February 18th show when high school football was going to be originally supposed to start.
And that would have just been absolutely ridiculous. So it's good that they found a time to play the season, and I have to bring it up because I don't know a whole lot about local high school football, but I do know that our very own Eric Schweizer went to Prairie Central, home of the Hawks, they did drop the ball against Monticello High School last Friday. It was a riveting game. I believe it was 18-15 was the final score. And they've got a guy, the quarterback for Monticello, I believe. His name is Joey Sprinkle. And so,
you got to be an athlete with a name.
You got to ball out if you've got the last name Sprinkle. Yeah. Like, that's just something you have to do. So there's my little fun tidbit of high school football knowledge that I have to throw out there. Take a little. And I know we were talking earlier. You said you didn't know a whole lot about the Prairie Central squad now, but just had to remind you.
Joey always reminding everybody of that kind of stuff. But Eric, you get to see some very, one of the best things about covering high school sports is you get to see some very just dominant athletes. Like, there's nothing better than watching a high school game and seeing, like, you know, a future like Division I standout that's just is a larger human than anyone else on the field. Who's like one player you've been able to see so far in your coverage that is your best player in the area?
Just from what I've seen, it has to be junior Max Zebarth from normal West. 6'5", 230 pounds. He plays basketball and football, but he's getting recruited for mainly football. Probably getting recruited for both, but he's got two offers already and 11 total schools of interest.
Oh, wow.
You'll probably know every single school on this list. Eastern Illinois, offer. Illinois State has an offer for
Huge.
Him.
Yeah.
Cincinnati, just interested. Illinois, interested. Indiana, Marshall, Northern Illinois, Purdue, Southern, Western Illinois, and Western Michigan.
That's some Big Ten action in there.
And speaking of Western Michigan, their defensive end, Corey Walker, he played basketball, too, for Normal West. And so both of them were their star players on the basketball team. And now Corey Walker is going to Western Michigan next year for football. He's 6'6", really big. He weighs a lot, and he's a beast inside the paint. And I haven't seen him play football, though, but I did watch a little bit of his huddle highlights when I covered the basketball game just to kind of take a look at what he was. And, man, he was moving guys around on that defensive line. And Normal West right now, are they at 2-0 or
they're 1-1? Yeah, they lost to Community, but then got a win in their Week 2 matchup against Bloomington.
Okay,
so hopefully ISU though can get on that on Zbarth and get him to commit before some of these other schools do, because that'd be a huge find right from your own backyard.
Yeah,
obviously we saw with the camp that they lost him to South Dakota and paid the consequences to that.
And Carson Camp has been absolutely turning it up for South Dakota this year. And that just goes to show you, like, we produce some great football players out here in the Normal community in Bloomington. So it's been a fun ride watching some of these guys graduate and go to these schools. Yeah. And it's awesome to hear that there's more guys who are coming up through that path and have interest, especially like those Big Ten schools. That's so exciting, especially for a junior in high school. Like, who knows how well his season's going to go next year and how much his stock is going to rise.
Yeah, for Zbarth, I didn't get the exact amount of receiving yards he had last week, but it was over 200 easily. Wow. He had an 86-yard touchdown like on their second drive of the game. Mm-hmm. He totally carried the quarterback.
And so that helps, too. When you don't have a set starting quarterback, you have a guy like that, Joe and I can make throws to that guy for touchdowns.
Just get him the ball, Literally, there's guys like that in high school, too. Like, if you just get this one guy the ball, he's just better than everyone on the field. And
that's
make
why I love
miss.
High school football, because to a certain extent, it's very even. The teams could be well-coached. But then seeing, a future pro player, like, I saw Miles Boykin play, who's on the Ravens. I saw him play when he was at Providence Catholic. Mm-hmm. And his hands were like the size of like baseball mitts, and he looked like a trampoline when he went for a jump ball in the end zone. I was like, that guy's going to the NFL. Everybody else here is not. It's so much fun to watch, and it's just so exciting that we get high school football. Mm-hmm. I'm happy that Eric gets to cover it for it because he's our man on the inside there. We're gonna keep him around though to talk some MLB, so we'll see if he knows his stuff there, because it is opening day. So you're not gonna want to miss that. You're listening to Red Zone on 103.3 WZND, the Pulse of Redbird Nation. Welcome back to the Red Zone. It is MLB opening day, so what better way to play with some center field action?
Oh, yeah.
It's been a long offseason, but it finally feels right that we have a professional sports season starting in its normal time, and that we can see fans in attendance for a lot of these games. We're watching the Rockies-Dodgers games, and Coors Field
looks
pretty full, actually.
It looks like there's no capacity.
But opening day is always one of my favorite days of the year, where every team's 0-0. There's so much excitement around it, so much fanfare, and it's speaks so well that we made it this far, that we're trending finally in that upward direction, finally, and it's looking good for some of our teams. So where should we even start? Because Joey and I are Sox fans. We're repping the team. Joe's got his Javi Baez jersey on, and Eric is a Cardinals fan, so all three of the local teams covered.
Okay, I think this is a show that you guys are just going to roast on me.
Yeah,
I got three against one, kind of, because I feel like every Sox fan is somehow a Cardinals fan.
So let's go worst to best. So let's go Cubs, Cardinals, Sox.
Oh, yeah. Well, the Cubs already did play, so I guess we should
start
there.
We'll do the recap.
So the game, oh my God, it just looked like the same exact kind of team as we saw last year. Like, they had three hits going into the ninth inning at that point. They also had, they gave up 11 walks on the day. And Kyle Hendricks last year, he had his best year with walk rate. It was at his career low. But then this year, he walked, I wasn't as sure the exact number, but he walked a lot more batters. I think it was more batters in a single game than he did in a single game last year already,
too. And I got to say, I'm absolutely shocked that a team that made almost no moves during the offseason is playing exactly how they were last year.
They made a move. They traded their best pitcher. So.
Yeah.
But that was still a weird thing. I mean, I don't think we've even addressed that they traded Yu Darvish but are still trying to contend because that seemed like they need pitching help. They've never been able to develop a pitcher. Where do you see this rotation going from here? Do you think somebody like Adbert Alzolay could come in and make an impact, or who'd they get for Darvish? Zach Davies? Do you think anyone could be a potential improvement to this rotation?
Not an improvement, I would say, necessarily.
Because you're not going to replace Darvish,
but especially,
could this rotation be fixed is what I'm asking, maybe.
I don't know about fixed. I mean, I think it's going to be a little bit worse than last year. John Lester was declining, though. He had
an
ERA in the high fours last year. And they did bring Jake Arrieta back, who was also on the very far decline, too. But, I mean, coming back to the place where he was maybe had the best half of a pitcher in the past 40 years in the 2015 season. He's not going to come back to what he was, but it also brings back motivation for him.
That's what I was going to say. I think that's the thing I think Cubs fans are going to have to remember. He's not going to be 2015, 2016 Jake Arrieta, but if he could be a solid 4 or 5, that could be a good find. And I just find it ironic that they let Jake Arrieta walk in free agency to sign Yu Darvish.
Yeah.
Then they trade Yu Darvish and replace him with Jake Arrieta. The circle of life. And see, the pitching could be fixed, you think, which is good because they're going to need it to be fixed, because if not, there's going to be a lot of pressure on Kyle Hendricks. But how about the hitting? Because you had your tweet today that you said, Bryant, Contreras, I was going to say Schwarber, but he's gone now, and Rizzo.
These
guys,
Ross,
all had kind of bad years last year, but there's the potential they could come back. What do they got to do? Because I told you a little bit, there was an article in The Athletic in November about how this Cubs led the league in ground ball contact, which is bad, as opposed to fly ball contact.
Yeah, definitely.
So, and it doesn't help that all of your key players were struggling, hitting the ball on the ground, weren't making solid contact. Does that come down to an organizational philosophy or something that the hitting coach is doing? Or do you think this was a team that just had some bad luck at the plate last year?
I think it's a little bit of both, because if you also take a look at it, our two best hitters last year were probably towards the bottom in the previous 2 years, with Jason Hayward, who, what it seemed like in the first 3 to 4 years, was a complete bust of a signing. But recently, his defense has always been there. But in the past year and a half, going into last year and then the end of the 2019 season, he really improved at the plate offensively. He was driving in runs, and he was producing for the team that had no offense. And as you're saying, with those ground balls, I think it is with the organization, but it's hard to think about, because pitchers do try to do with that contact rate. They, like, Kyle Hendricks is that type of pitcher who uses his defense and draws contact. So maybe it's also
the way they're getting pitched.
Yeah, the opposition, how they're scouting the Cubs.
That's what I was going to say, scouting maybe. And part of it, too, I think comes from they fire their hitting coach every year and replace him. So you're not having that any kind of familiarity. You're basically learning a new coach, new philosophy every offseason. So I think that comes down to it, too, is they haven't had the same voice in their ear every offseason, which especially a lot of these guys are young, so you don't have that familiarity. That certainly doesn't help much either, but that's where it comes down to. You're relying on these guys to have a bounce-back season, but that's been the game plan the last three seasons. So I'd say the one in addition they made was one I wished my Sox made, was the Jock Peterson signing. I think if he has a breakout season, that could really break things open for the Cubs. That's a player could be really poised for a comeback player of the year type candidate.
Yeah, in the last games he played postseason, he did really well. And then spring training, even though, I mean, it's just spring training, you can't really base anything off of that. But he has a chance, I think. It's kind of the same type of player. There's him and Schwarber's skill levels. I mean, they're obviously a little different.
I think they had similar wins above replacement, too.
Exactly. They're like, if you look at the stats, it's almost like the same exact thing. Peterson could still hit home runs. Like, 2 years ago, I think he hit 36 home runs, led the Dodgers, too, in that year. So, yeah, I think that could do something good for the Cubs. He did drive in a run today, but their offense is still a little shaky.
All right, Eric, take your shots at the Cubs before we pivot to the Cardinals here.
Well, I'll start off by being nice. Peterson was hitting bombs in spring training.
He led
the team in home runs. My question for you is, Baez, Bryant, or Contreras, who do you trade? I think you got to trade one.
or it's probably going to be at least one, but Brian's trade value is just going down.
Yeah.
It just keeps going down, like, 2 years. People don't want to pay him that much, because especially contracts coming up, all these guys' contracts. But I think Rizzo, that's just a tough contract situation, too.
It is.
Because well, we were talking about this off-air.
I'm not saying I agree with the Cubs, because the Cubs handle their star players horribly in every capacity, manipulating service time, not giving them the money they want. Mm-hmm. I understand their hesitation to sign Anthony Rizzo, though, because he's 32 years old and has admitted he's had back problems dating back to 2014.
Yeah.
That seems like a type of long-term extension you want to avoid and, you know, spend that money on Baez or Contreras or somebody else. But it's so hard because Rizzo is that leader of the clubhouse. He's almost like a coach, and
he's like
you can't replace him.
Yeah, Andrea Vullo was saying a couple of days ago, he's like the Mr. Cub of this generation.
Yeah.
How much he meant to the fans, how much he means to the team. Like, he's a leader beyond the game of baseball, and how much he does for charity and everything. He's just a great guy. I think everyone could agree. Like, you can't really hate on Anthony Rizzo.
No, so that's where they got to find. He's owed this money. He's done so much for this team. He's been the longest tenured Cub. But also his value might not be worth that money, so it gets tricky.
And that situation is awesome for me as a Sox fan.
Yeah, let's talk a little about the Sox. I love
to hate the Cubs, but you, like Leo said, you can't hate Anthony Rizzo. And
it's
so,
like Tim Anderson for me. I like it. I like Tim Anderson.
Well,
you can't hate,
okay.
You can't
so
hate his swag.
So let's talk about the best shortstop in Chicago then. And
as I wear my Javier Baez World Series jersey.
Hey, okay. Just give him some time.
All right.
Give him some time.
All right, okay.
So the Sox are one of. Oh, my goodness. They're one of the best teams in the AL, and that's just a fact. Like, that's not even me being biased. But looking at their rotation is absolutely nuts.
Really?
Like,
you think that?
Giolito, Keuchel, Lance Lynn, Dylan Cease, Carlos Rodon.
Oh, I'm iffy about this rotation.
Really?
Because Keuchel, I was worried about him because he kind of faded as the season went on last year. Was in, got banged up a little bit, and that was in the 65-game season, whatever it was. So I'm kind of worried about him over 162. Lance Lynn, I like that trade. I think that was a solid pickup.
Yeah, that was definitely a solid.
It's gonna stink to lose Dane Dunning because eventually he'll probably be worth more.
Oh,
but
he's gonna be good. But I like Lance Lynn for now.
But those are the moves you make when you're going all in, which I'll get to that later. That. I liked it at the time, don't like that trade as much now because they didn't do much more to go all in, but we'll get to that later. Mm-hmm. But then you go to, so you got your top three there. Giolito's one of the best pitchers in baseball. But then you're relying on your fourth and fifth pitchers to a bunch of what-ifs. Dylan Cease struggled to find the strike zone last year. His ball to strike rate or whatever was horrible last year. And that could have been attributed to Don Cooper. We're going to see what Ethan Katz could do with him because he was Lucas Giolito and Jack Flaherty's high school coach. Mm-hmm, he's going to work wonders on them, hopefully. But so you're relying on him as your fourth. And then
Kopech
or Rodon's going to be the fifth, or Ronaldo Lopez is out of the picture, but still, you rely on somebody that hasn't pitched in the majors in 2 years, or Carlos Rodon, who hasn't been able to stay healthy for a full season in his career.
And the Kopech, the whole thing about Kopech is, if he is actually healthy, coming off of all those injury issues, if he can come in, that's a legit four.
It could be scary, but I still think it's going to take time for him to get adjusted to the major league level.
Because he hasn't even been here.
How many innings does he have in the majors? Like, less than 30. Like,
yeah, exactly.
It scares me because that back end of the rotation, I think, is where things could fall
off. And even if the bullpen still looks really nice,
and the addition of Liam Hendricks is...
Liam Hendricks is like our generation's Bobby Jenks.
I think he's better than what Bobby Jenks ever was.
I'm not going to take any Bobby Jenks slander.
Bobby Jenks was in the show
07.
Oh my God.
Was lights out.
But
he was a lights out.
Bobby Jenks had like a 3-year window. Liam Hendricks has been good his pretty much whole career and is going to keep getting better. They're completely different pitchers. Like, and that's where I'm so excited that he could be an elite closer for this team.
And then the bats on this team are nuts.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because with Eloy going out, too.
Yeah,
for,
that's where I'm going to get
to. 4 to 5 months, because he can come back, too, in the playoffs. I feel like there's a chance.
Yeah.
Kind of like a Kyle Schwarber type thing, where this guy might, a young dude, might come out of nowhere in the playoffs, and I think he has the power, like Schwarber, to get this team to a World
Absolutely. Series. He'll be their DH in the playoffs, which is where he should have been playing all along. Mm-hmm. They needed two outfielders this offseason, and they went about that by signing Adam Eden and Billy Hamilton. That's where I'm upset
That's
with this team. Is that, okay, they went all in for Lynn and for Hendricks, but then they did nothing to address the outfield situation, and that came back to bite them, because even last year, you did not have a right fielder. Adam Spanky Eden isn't going to be that right fielder. He came off his worst season as a pro.
2 years ago, even.
And So I think they needed to do more in the outfield position. That's what's going to hurt them. I wanted to see them. I wanted to see your guy Schwarber, Joe. I'll admit that. I'm a Cubs hater, but I've always been a Schwarber
agree.
Guy.
I can't agree, Leo.
Really?
I don't.
Him hitting at USL or guaranteed rate, that's a hitter's park. He would crush it there. He'd be hitting balls to DeLaSalle High School, which is like a mile away from the rate. But I think they needed an upgrade in right field. They needed a real everyday player, and they didn't get that in right or left now because Eloy, he's a DH. He should not even be in the outfield. And now you're replacing him with Andrew Vaughn, who was a first baseman in college, and you're throwing another kid just into the fire, a DH playing outfield. It's the same situation. So I think that lack of activity on that front is going to come back to hurt them.
And as we run out of time here, let's bring it back to the NL Central for a second.
Yep.
Talk about Schweizer's Cards, who looks scary. On paper, this is a pretty scary team.
Yeah, it is a pretty scary team. Paul Goldschmidt playing out of his mind in game one. Four hits on 5 at-bats. Even somehow the Reds were able to walk Jack Flaherty twice, and he's the pitcher today, so he got on base twice. And Arenado, 2-for-5.
Let's talk about that real quick. How did the Cardinals trade for Nolan Arenado without giving up any of their top 5 prospects? Like, that was just a fleece job. That's insane.
I think we can chalk that up to the Rockies being a poverty franchise and not knowing how to manage their talent.
And looking at it, I was talking with one of my friends who is a Cardinals fan, how Nolan Arenado is going to take Matt Carpenter's spot as the Cubs killer. And probably the best third baseman in the league, especially defensively, offensively.
Oh, yeah.
He can hit runs, drive in, great on-base percentage to OPS. And as a Cubs fan, it scares me. It does scare me, but I don't know.
For the Cubs standpoint, who else in the Central besides the Cardinals do they have to worry about?
Brewers are still decent. They got a couple Woodruff and their other pitcher. They got a decent rotation and bullpen, too, and they still got Yelich and a lot of guys out there. So.
Okay, I forgot about that.
Yeah. And you brought up Matt Carpenter. And, Eric, where is Matt Carpenter, like, in the whole scheme of things now with Nolan Arenado in the lineup? Like, the depth chart has him listed as starting DH.
Yeah.
But does he have any more of a role than that?
No, he will definitely be DH when they're on the road until he starts, you know, not being able to hit the ball because he hasn't been able to hit the ball since.
Yeah, that's true.
For the past, like, 2-3 years, he has not been able to hit the ball. And even like, the season where he was considered an MVP candidate, he fell off at the end of the season. He hasn't been able to hit since.
And I always was a fan of his. I thought he was really good. So I hope he finds somewhere to go. But if I'm cheering for a team in the NL Central, Eric, I got your back. My dad's a Cards fan, so that's
every
where I'm
Sox
going.
Fan is literally a Cardinals fan. Like, it's just so disappointing.
I don't care for
them. It's just like they always want to come pig out on the Cubs. So whoever, I'm a Twins fan, guys. So let's go Twins.
Well, have fun losing in the playoffs.
All right, you too. I don't know. I'll hit some dingers on you.
All right, fine. A bunch of dingers in the regular season that don't matter. And that, as much as we'd like to keep this going, we're gonna step outside and probably go solve things on the quad with our friends.
Actually, Joe's about to go break dance on the
classes.
But it was a great show, guys. We'd like to thank Ashley Santos for coming on, Eric Schweizer for updating us on the local high school football scene, and then it's so great to have baseball back, guys. I can't wait. We got tons of Redbird sports coming. Pro sports are ramping up. It's going to be a fun finish this semester. 4 shows left after today. We are going to be here. You've been listening to the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation. Have a good night, everybody.
To hear this and other past episodes of The Red Zone, again, download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And, of course, tune into The Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.